That was a wonderful song. I'm glad that suggestion was made from one of them. You don't hear many songs that are done like that, and glad we had glad, Jeff, that you were able to lead that. It was very well done, and great to hear all the voices when we get to praise God together. I heard this saying one time that, actually quite a few times, there's always a million reasons not to do something. There's always a million reasons not to do something. Usually when this saying is associated with a certain situation, it's usually associated with that people question their abilities in doing what they need to do. They question their ability to do something. People tend to, people sometimes, they procrastinate and they're lazy with some of the things that they do. Sometimes we wait until the last minute to do something if we're going to do it. And sometimes when it gets to that point, it's too late. It doesn't go on to be as good as we were hoping for it to be. A lot of us, we don't do what we need to do because we don't want to do it. Necessity has become secondary to our wants. And what we need to do is to make what we need to be what we want. What we want, what we desire, what we need needs to be what we want. A lot of us have jobs, and we do it, and if we do it well, we may get rewarded. You may get that raise or that bonus or the new position at work that you've been hoping to get. But if we do it poorly, we suffer the consequences. It may end up in a decrease in benefits or in something or you may just lose your job all in one go. And the reason that usually happens is because, we've had so much time to do something and we didn't use the time wisely for that certain thing to be done. And then when our boss comes to us and tells us, hey, you're not doing a good job. We gave you so much time for this thing to be done. So why was it so horrible? It did not fulfill what we expected. And we start to make excuses for why it went wrong. This was Moses' attitude. This was his attitude toward God when he appeared to him in the burning bush. Go ahead and turn to Exodus chapter 3. Exodus chapter 3, that's where we're going to be at today, looking at the excuses of Moses and but also some of the brighter sides of what happened as a result of this event. If there is one thing that Moses was the king of when God came to him in the burning bush, it was excuses. He had an excuse for everything under the sun. He was probably counting on his fingers. What can I say for this? What can I say for that? And he just kept on going down the line. But the first excuse we see starts in Exodus chapter 3, verse 11. It says, "But Moses said to God, 'Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh, and that I should bring the sons of Israel out of Egypt?'" Moses said, "Lord, who am I to be able to do this mission that you're talking about? More important, and even more, who am I? Pharaoh doesn't even know me, so why would he listen to me? Why would he listen to someone like me when just this random person coming up to him and saying, 'You need to let the people of Israel go, why would he listen to that? Why is he going to listen to me if I do that? His next excuse comes in verse 13. It says, then Moses said to God, behold, I am going to the sons of Israel, and I will say to them, the God of your fathers has sent me to you. But now they may say to me, what is his name? What shall I say to them? Moses says, what will I tell them? Where do I even begin to say something to them? How do I even back up like what I'm going to say to them? Like, where would I even begin to tell them that he should as to why he should listen to me? And then he goes on with his next excuse in chapter 4, verse 1. Then Moses said, what if they will not believe me or listen to what I say? For they may say, the Lord has not appeared to you. Moses is basically saying, what if they will not believe me? Am I going to be rejected for going to these people and telling them that God is here to free them from captivity, that Pharaoh is supposed to free these people? What if they don't believe me that this is going to happen? And then going on into verse 10, he said, then Moses said to the Lord, please, Lord, I have never been eloquent, neither recently nor in time past, nor since you have spoken to your servant, for I am slow of speech and slow of tongue. Moses goes on, he's starting to pull some even weaker cards, like, Lord, I can't speak well. You know, like, will I stumble, or what will I struggle to say what you need me to say? And then his last excuse comes in verse 13. He said, please, Lord, now send the message by whomever you will. Basically, Moses is saying, can you send someone else? Can you send someone else? Because, frankly, I'm incapable of doing this. Like, with all these things, I'm questioning myself, and I think I am incapable of doing what you want me to do. Moses, being the king of excuses during this section, he's quite a pessimistic person for looking at this situation like of being able to work with God in such a way. Every time Moses gave an excuse, God answered back to him, and he gives him a reason as to why he can do this. This goes back to, there's always a million reasons not to do something, but there's one good reason as to why we should, especially if that reason is because God tells us to, and because God is on our side. The answers from God. Back in chapter 3, starting in verse 12, he says, and he said, certainly I will be with you, and this shall be the sign to you that it is I who have sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you shall worship God at this mountain. God told Moses, I will be with you. And not only that, I'm going to give you a sign when this piece of this mission is completed. You will all worship me at this mountain when I bring you out. If we go on to look further, that's exactly what happened. The people of Israel were so pleased that they did worship God when they were brought out. But this isn't enough for Moses. He's got to edge on the issue, and he's got to go back and he's got to say, what am I going to tell them? What kind of support do I possibly have to say that, you know, that this is what is actually going to happen? Well, verses 14 through 22, it covers that whole section, but verse 14 in and of itself is God's answer. God said to Moses, I am who I am. And he said, thus you shall say to the sons of Israel, I am has sent me to you. We think about that verse in the book of Isaiah, the little snippet that we usually see in many different posts or when giving a word of encouragement, and it says, "Here I am, send me." Now, this was completely the opposite attitude that Moses had at this point. But God was basically telling Moses, just like, you're going to do this no matter what excuse you're going to give, and I'm going to give you reasons to do it and why it is going to be you, and the reason that you are capable of doing this. Not only will I be with you, but I'm here to tell you I am who I am. No one has the power except for me for this to be possible. No one has the power except for me to tell Pharaoh that he is going to let the people go, and that this fulfillment of letting Israel go is going to happen. The next answer from God comes from verses 2 through 9 in chapter 4. It says, "The Lord said to him, 'What is that in your hand?' And he said, 'A staff.' And then he said, 'Throw it on the ground.' And so he threw it on the ground, and it became a serpent, and Moses fled from it. But the Lord said to Moses, 'Stretch out your hand and grasp it by its tail.' So he stretched out his hand and caught it, and it became a staff in his hand, that they may believe that the Lord, the God of their fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob, has appeared to you. The Lord furthermore said to him, 'Now put your hand into your bosom.' And so he put his hand into his bosom, and when he took it out, behold, it was full of leprosy. And then he said, 'Put your hand back into your bosom again.' And so he put his hand back into his bosom, and when he took it out, behold, it was restored like the rest of his flesh. If they will not believe you or heed the witness of the first sign, they may believe the witness of the last sign. But if they will not believe even these two signs or heed what you say, then you shall take some water from the Nile and pour it out on the dry ground, and the water which you take from the Nile will become blood on the dry ground." God tells Moses, in response to "what if they don't believe me," he says, "Look at what's in your hand. This simple thing, this staff," which he holds in his hand, that was meant for the shepherding of his sheep and to protect his sheep from those that were there to harm them or himself. "Look at what's in your hand. I'm going to use this to show them that I really am who I am." God is basically saying, "With me, you will not fail." Well, then we get on, and Moses gives that excuse, "Well, I can't speak well, Lord. I'm completely incapable of doing this." And we know Moses is given this as an excuse because for the first 40 years of his life, he was educated amongst some of the greatest scholars in Egypt. He was more than capable of speaking. He was more than capable of doing the job. But he didn't want to do it. God said in verses 11 and 12, "The Lord said to him, 'Who has made man's mouth? Or who makes him mute or deaf or seeing or blind? Is it not I, the Lord? Now then go, and I, even I, will be with your mouth and teach you what you are to say.'" God says, "I'm going to help you speak." The great thing about God's words today is that we have been given his word to speak to those who are in need of it. And that's what God was going to do for Moses. He was going to give them the words that both Pharaoh and that the Israelites needed for this whole thing to play out the way that it needed to. Moses now is just scraping the bottom of the barrel. He says, "Can you send someone else then? Like, send the message by whomever you will." In verses 14 through 17, the Lord answers, "Then the anger of the Lord burned against Moses." This was pushing God to the edge with his patience with Moses. "The anger of the Lord burned against Moses, and he said, Is there not your brother Aaron the Levite? I know that he speaks fluently, and moreover, behold, he is coming out to meet you, and when he sees you, he will be glad in his heart. You are to speak to him and put the words in his mouth, and I, even I, will be with your mouth and his mouth, and I will teach you what you are to do. Moreover, he shall speak for you to the people, and he will be as a mouth for you, and you will be as God to him. And you shall take in your hand this staff with which you shall perform the signs. God answered him by giving him some support, by giving him a leeway, by giving him just a little bit more confidence. And then the rest after that is history. The whole sequence of the events plays out, and eventually, a little bit longer down the road, the Israelites are released, and they make their way to the mountain. And that whole section of the Israelites being saved is fulfilled. God is our support unit. God is the reason that we can do the things, or is the way that we are able to do the things in which we need to do. There are things that excuses do to harm us. When we make excuses, things go in a negative way. But when we start to execute the things that we need to be doing, it goes in a more positive direction. It goes so much better, in such a much more positive way, when we do the things that God desires for us to do. I want to look at it, just a few things that excuses do to us, and a few things that execution does for us. Execution, first off, it hinders our faith. Excuses hinder our faith. Moses, he showed a great lack of confidence in believing that the Lord would help him. And we do this, even us as people, or even us as Christians, we show a great lack of confidence in believing what the Lord is capable of doing by just coming here and keeping him in this building. Me and a couple of the teens were at YOU this weekend, and the speaker there, Matthew Marine, he spoke on evangelism this weekend, and it kind of inspired me to do a little bit of the same, and I'm going to use an illustration that he used with keeping God in the building. He said that he and his daughter went to the zoo one time, and they were viewing the grizzly bear that was there behind the glass, and his daughter looks up to him and she says, "Daddy, do you think you can fight that bear?" And he's like, "You bet it, sweetie. Like, you know I can fight this bear." Well, they live in Colorado, and they go hiking quite a bit. And when they get to the hiking trail, he tells his daughter, "Now, if we see bears or any sort of animal that can possibly produce harm, we need to make sure that we get out of this area." She said, "But Dad, I thought you could fight that off." He's like, "Honey, I don't have a chance. Like, I don't have a chance, especially out here. None of us have a chance." It goes to speak that if we keep God only in this building, he doesn't have a chance out there. There's no way that us as Christians can reach the lost if we only come to this building to put God into our lives in this way. God needs to be out there in the world and in our homes, teaching our children, and still constantly us as adults, as parents, as grandparents, as, you know, great-grandparents as some of you may possibly be. God is for teaching us even more so when we're not here. When we're here in worship, this is for God. When we're out there, it's for God and for those who need him. What's the point of having God in here if we don't take him out there? Excuses hinder our faith, which means that excuses go on to disappoint others. Excuses disappoint others. God became angered with Moses because he kept making excuses. Moses was, at this point, he was one of those guys that, where basically his motto was, busy has become the new lazy. Moses was trying to give every excuse under the sun to not do what God wanted him to do. Now, when we say busy has become the new lazy, it gives that image of saying, well, I could go and help out with this event or with something that's going on tonight at church, but you know what, I just don't really feel like it. I'm going to go home, sit on my couch, kick my feet up, and just watch TV and just, you know, have the night away. And when we come to church and we're asked, you know, why weren't you there on Sunday? You know, like, we really needed you. Why weren't you there for this? You know, we really needed you. Busy has become the new lazy. When was the last time that we made God the priority in our life? We can come to church when it's scheduled all we want. We can come here and say that, you know, this is what makes God happy. It's just worshiping Him. But if we're not making a difference with Him out there, we're not making a difference with Him in here or in heaven or with the importance and the reverence that is supposed to be held for God in any place at any time. Make the difference for God out there, and it will definitely make a difference of what goes on inside this building. Excuses reveal who we are. Moses was educated. He was faithful. But he was unwilling. He was unwilling to endure the task. Without Aaron, without any sort of help whatsoever. And it took a lot of patience and a lot of convincing from God to get Moses to get to the point to do what he was supposed to do. While we are subject to love and encourage one another, it should not take the encouragement or a forced feeling to do something to help the church. If it's taking every possible answer to an excuse in order to get you to be here to do something for the church, at that point you're not doing it because you care, but because you don't want to be seen as lazy and unwilling and be seen as one that took all that convincing just for this one thing. Every member of the body is able and perfect to do the will of God if they just put Him first. I've talked a bit about excuses. It's easy for a lot of us to go down this road and make an excuse to not to do something. But let's talk about what happens when we look at the other side of the situation. Let's look at the execution side. Execution builds our faith. Achieving builds our faith. Doing what we need to do builds our faith. Because Moses did what God said, he went on to do even more great things for God. He went on to be the deliverer of the Ten Commandments, the one that God took him alone up on that mountain for such an extended period of time, and he literally got to have that tablet and watch as the substance from God was engraving those tablets. He got to witness that. He was able to hold the first written laws of God. The first written laws that God has ever created. And that in and of itself is a high honor. This goes to tell us that when we hold to the commandments and to the law of God, that will build us up. It turns us into the people, the Christians that we are supposed to be. When we execute, it builds our faith. Which means execution pleases others. The Israelites, they were pleased that they had been given something that they had not had in a long time. They were given freedom. But not just freedom. They were given a leader who remembered them, who was full of grace and mercy, who was slow to anger and was steadfast in love, as Exodus 34 and verses 6 and 7 goes on to say, and Psalm 86:15, even Jonah chapter 4, verse 2. Those places describe their leader, the Lord. It pleased God that the Israelites, who wanted to get out, who wanted to be free from this bondage from Egypt, that they followed his steps before fleeing from Egypt. We probably remember the steps of them throwing out like their not putting yeast in the bread because they didn't have time for it to rise. They ate of unleavened bread, and they took the lamb and they took the blood from that lamb and put it on their doorpost as the final plague was about to hit, and anything that they ate or didn't eat was supposed to be dealt with and taken care of. The people that did that, it pleased God. They did what they were supposed to do. When we get out there and we start to do the mission of Jesus, it makes God happy. Yes, it makes God happy when we're here in this hall and we're here praising Him and worshiping Him. But the difference doesn't come from inside this building. It comes from out there in our personal lives and from doing the evangelism, seeking and saving the lost, which was the ultimate goal of Jesus Himself. When we are out there doing the mission of Jesus, it makes God happy. In turn, execution makes a new us. Moses himself became a leader. He still made mistakes, but he became the leader and a speaker that the Israelites needed at times so that they would honestly be able to keep the skins on their backs. God had gotten so fed up with the unfaithfulness that they ended up showing just not very far long down the road after getting out of captivity. God was ready to have them put down. He was ready to not have a worry of what seemed to be like just a cycle of unfaithfulness, and he was ready for it to end. But Moses stepped in and saved their skins. Moses was looking out for those who knew that they needed God. He was willing to do anything to show that the love of God upon the people out there, and that God's deliverance of the people is what is most important. Working for Jesus is what matters. The point of becoming a child of God through baptism, it's not just to say that you have been forgiven, but that you're ready to work. That you're ready to work. Jesus gave a ransom for the many who choose to accept his sacrifice and to be transformed through it. Jesus makes us who we ought to be if we let him. I hope that in the end, that when Jesus comes back, that he can tell me that, Mark, you are the child of God that I thought you were. You're a Christian. You belong in my Father's house. Well done, good and faithful servant. Enter into the joy of heaven. You are who I said you were. And I hope he can say that to every single one of you too. Because of his sacrifice, we are chosen, not forsaken. I am who you say I am. It's part of a song that I heard during YOU this weekend. And it's a song that stuck out to me the most, and it's the small piece from it that struck me and I felt like that I should share. Because of his sacrifice, we are chosen, not forsaken. I am who you, God, say I am. I am who he says I am. You are who he says you are. It is my prayer and my hope for this church that we do not hold God just in this building, but that we take him to our homes, instill him into our children, and take him to the world and give him to those who have been deprived of him and who need him just as much as we do. This afternoon, you have an opportunity to make that great confession, to begin the work that God wants you to uptake, to uphold with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength, with all your mind, doing his work and having the faith that you do by doing those works goes to show that you love God, and it goes to show that you love the people who need him. You have an opportunity to become a Christian if you haven't already done that. You also have an opportunity to come forward if you're looking for prayers and encouragement from the congregation. We're here to help you and to pray for you, to help you maybe get back and take that extra step that you need to take to get back on track. If there's anything we can do for anyone, please come as we stand and sing the song of invitation.